and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and today we continue our Fantasy Files series with a little bit of a wild card. We are going through the handcuff situations from all 32 teams. I'll try and make this brief. Not going to give you 5 minutes on every backfield in the league. We got usually a Fantasy File episode devoted to each of those. But basically, I was going through, you know, each of these are basically set up to do one per team for the quarterback, the backfield, the wide receiver room. I was looking at the Patriots, and I was just thinking, like, okay, now might be a good time to get into some of these handcuffs because it's such a, you know, some of these are so unclear and we just don't really know what's going on until August that I think there's better things to research at times. So with that said, I'm going to go through the top fantasy football handcuffs. And for those that don't know, we are looking at the running back position, basically going through every single number two running back and theorizing what might happen if the starter goes down, because not every, obviously not every number two running back is created equal. You know, well, some of them are truly one injury away from getting on the field full time. Other ones, their role doesn't change and a number three guy will take the job. Other times it changes a little bit. So I've broken down the six tiers and we will get going with that. Tier one, these are your truly elite top four handcuffs. There are four of them. Number one, Kareem Hunt. I mean, don't be disappointed in the stretch he put together last year. He was a little bit banged up. I know he didn't, you know, rock your freaking socks off, but he still put together snap rates of 70%, 53% in a blowout, 38-7 blowout where the whole first team offense was done by the fourth quarter. Then 90% and 86% snap rates, average 18.8 touches per game during that stretch. I know Kareem Hunt is already going top 24, so he's not your classic handcuff. Just realize he is absolutely a top five running back if anything happens to Nick Chubb. Tony Pollard is also a top four handcuff. I mean, for him to get that 90% snap rate against the 49ers when Zeke missed time, also turned in the overall RB1 finish in that week. I think we all know just how good Pollard would be if Zeke is ever forced to miss time. I mean, truly, people. Pollard tied with Nick Chubb for the most missed tackles forced per rush, tied with Derrick Henry for yards after contact per rush over the past 2 years. I know those guys are doing it on high volume, but just to be in that conversation, whether it's, you know, heavily impacted by, you know, your volume or not, still he's made a lot of special plays. Latavius Murray still belongs in this group. I mean, he supplied true top three value in back-to-back weeks when Alvin Kamara missed time in 2019. They're comfortable throwing him the ball without Kamara, and they don't have another running back that's going to be taking those snaps. And honestly, if Taysom Hill ends up winning this job, we could see Latavius more involved in on a week-to-week basis, because with Taysom Hill under center last year, Alvin Kamara had 50 carries. Latavius had 40, Taysom Hill 39. I mean, he's going to be fine. And Latavius is, you know, unlike Pollard, unlike our next running back, actually does have more standalone flex value on a week-to-week basis. Next guy, Alexander Mattison. And I know he burnt some of us people, by some of us, probably all of us in that Falcons game. But again, just like that aforementioned Kareem Hunt one, you know, when your team's down 3-4 touchdowns into the third quarter, it's going to be hard for any running back, regardless of who you are, to really turn that around. So important thing, Mattison in three games, Cook missed two games, another game, I think he played fewer than like 40% snaps or something. Mattison had 23, 11, and 24 touches in those games. Vikings run first philosophy. It's a little bit lower here. Like maybe it's, you know, I do think he deserves to be the number four handcuff because he doesn't have the same every down role as Hunt, Pollard, or Murray. Like we are going to see Amir Abdullah steal some pass down work. But at the same time, Mattison, you know, just as the featured back of the Vikings, if Cook goes down, certainly deserves to be that RB4 in terms of handcuffs. All right, our tier two. This tier is defined as already part of a committee with room to flourish if disaster strikes. I got the Raiders here, Kenyon Drake. I mean, he's apparently going to be more involved than really any of these other backups have been behind Josh Jacobs. The one issue with Josh Jacobs getting, you know, the true every down role over the years has been the presence of, you know, more pass catchers. So if they're slotting in Drake as a pass catcher, theoretically, if Jacobs goes down, Drake would take on a near every down role. Jamal Williams with the Detroit Lions. I mean, earlier this offseason, Anthony Lynn said Williams is what he considered their classic A-back, and his B-back is actually DeAndre Swift. I can't imagine Jamal Williams actually being, you know, the starter getting more touches than Swift, but, you know, similar to Latavius, like it's a possibility in either way. Okay, Latavius isn't going to steal from Kamara. What I meant similar to Latavius is that, you know, Jamal is going to have like weekly flex value in addition to huge handcuff value if disaster strikes. So don't sleep on Jamal, even in the new environment. I also put the Jaguars on there, James Robinson. I mean, I understand people that ETN is set up to play this, you know, Percy Harvin-esque role, but do we really think like ETN isn't going to push for 200 carries? They just drafted the guy in the first round. I know Urban wants to focus on some of his receiving stuff. This you know, he's going to lead the way in rush attempts and targets in this backfield, I believe. But if something happens to ETN, then we got James Robinson seeping back in to getting all the pass down work, which, as we saw last year, he can handle. Just don't sleep on, yes, people, Carlos Hyde taking away some early down work. It would suck, but either way, James Robinson certainly has proven he can handle that workload. And if something happens to ETN, he'll be right back there as a borderline weekly RB1. With the Broncos, I mean, look, it's going to be Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams to start. You know, hopefully Javonte takes over sooner rather than later. But again, Javonte is going to be a committee back at worst. And if something happens to Melvin, you know, with all due respect to Mike Boone, Royce Freeman, it makes sense that the 35th overall pick of the draft vaults up the depth chart and gets fed the sort of role that you draft someone to get. With the Packers, AJ Dillon, someone that I just scooped up in a draft I was doing about 15 minutes ago. And, you know, if you can get him in that RB30 range, go ahead, people, because as much as Aaron Jones is locked in as a starter, over the past 4 years, Jamal Williams has gotten 178, 148, 146, and 150 touches. I mean, Dillon only caught 21 passes in 35 games at Boston College. With that said, you know, we are getting some camp reports lost in the whole thing about Jordan Love, you know, having these great practices. One of the tweets was talking about how Dillon caught a wheel pass 30 yards downfield. Dillon might get that same role as Williams. I think it'll be shifted. I think, you know, Dillon might eat more into Jones's carries and Jones gets more of the overall target share compared to when he split with Jamal. Either way, I mean, when Williams missed two games last year, he posted 89% and 85% snap rates. As long as Dillon is competent, you know, at receiving, I think he would get a similar every down role should something happen to Aaron Jones. 49ers also fit this category. I mean, it's going to be Raheem Mostert, Trey Sermon, and Wayne Gallman to some extent, some sort of committee stretch. Maybe we get, you know, Mitchell out there as well. But with these guys, you know, as we saw last year when Mostert was going down, Jeff Wilson was, you know, Jerick McKinnon 1 week, Jeff Wilson another, the snap rates fluctuating. The guys are going to have every week roles. And if something happens to someone, they have the potential for a lot more. That's why on our 49ers episode, I was saying, like, all these guys are good values because they're being priced to their floors. Like, they're, you know, RB3s in Fantasyland. You're drafting them in the bottom of the 20s, early 30s. Like, that's what we'd expect, that everyone stays healthy. But God forbid, you know, Mostert gets hurt and all of a sudden Sermon's starting by week three. Now we're looking at a potential, you know, high-end RB2 or something like that. Final team of the category, the Arizona Cardinals, you know, had a recent podcast open about this, Chase Edmonds and, you know, James Conner and what they're going to be doing. Basically, it seems like Conner is going to get most of the short yardage work. Maybe he even takes the full Kenyon Drake early down role. I do think Edmonds gets a chance to maybe not be a 90% snap guy, but at least like 60, 70 and get most of the targets. But hey, if something happens to Edmonds, you know, despite what all you, you know, Benjamin stands might think, I think James Conner, you know, with his relationship with the running back coach and all that, and just, you know, being a running back that can work on all three downs in his own right, James Conner is shaping up as someone that's also a very good late round option. All right, tier three. So this one I label, it's not a guarantee, but you can imagine, you know, shout out to that Billy Madison scene from back in the day with Chris Farley. But, you know, basically with these guys, we don't have like a proven situation of what's going to happen if the starter goes down, but I think it's feasible to assume that this backup running back could have an every down role if disaster strikes. This would be about where I draw the line though and say, like, you should not necessarily be targeting these guys super heavily in fantasy land. Maybe the first guy, but after that, and I would say it right now, the first guy is Daryl Henderson and the Los Angeles Rams, because again, the reason I'm so high on Cam Akers, and a lot of you should be as well, is because the potential for him to get that every down Todd Gurley workhorse role. And I would assume if Akers gets hurt, then Daryl Henderson would be next up to have this every down Todd Gurley-esque workhorse role. The only problem is that Henderson in his 28 games with the Rams has only hit 50% of the snaps on two occasions. So Akers, like, as much as people want to put down his end of the season stretch, like, he was ripping off like every down workloads that we just haven't even seen them give Henderson. So I don't think it's that Henderson can't do that. I just think it's been a weird, you know, 2 years with him constantly playing behind first Gurley. And then this last year, you know, having to deal with everything going on with, you know, Akers and Malcolm Brown. Just realize again, the reason he's not in tier two is because we haven't seen Henderson get this actual featured role. I'm fine taking a gamble on him where he's going, like in the RB 40 range, because there is a good chance. I mean, again, I do think Akers gets the featured role, but there's also a chance I'm wrong. It's more of a 1A, 1B situation. And I do consider Henderson a solid enough handcuff if a disaster strikes. So he would be the one guy from this group I would say go ahead and scoop up in your fantasy draft. So quickly to summarize here before we get into the rest of the kind of more muddled situations, these are basically the teams that I think you would be well-versed to take a number two running back as part of like a zero RB strategy, because I think the upside if the starter goes down is immense. So those teams, the Browns and Kareem Hunt, Cowboys, Tony Pollard, Saints and Latavius Murray, Vikings and Alexander Mattison. We have the Raiders and Kenyon Drake, the Lions and Jamal Williams, the Jaguars and James Robinson, the Broncos and Devontae Williams, the Packers and AJ Dillon, the 49ers and Trey Sermon or Raheem Mostert, whichever one you want to, you know, consider there. They're both good values. Cardinals and James Conner, and the Rams and Daryl Henderson. Now, not every single one of these guys is a great value where they're going. Obviously, you know, Devontae, James Robinson priced a bit higher than some of these other guys we were talking about. I would just say, though, they have that sky high value if something happens to their team starter, and that's better than what you can say for a lot more of these running backs we're going to get to. So I'll go through these situations a little bit more quick, a little more quickly. You can find this full article, 4,000 words, up on pff.com as well if you guys want to check out more specifics. So peep that. But the Steelers, seems like it's going to be Benny Snell right now. We've seen this backfield, you know, lead to guys like, you know, D'Angelo Williams, even Stephon Ridley. His corpse for a couple years was still doing some good things in Pittsburgh on the occasional week 17 game getting fed. I'm just not sure Benny Snell has the pass down work to, you know, make it work and kind of work that far ahead of guys like Kalen Ballage, Jalen Samuels, Anthony McFarlane. Hey, you know, he did handle touch counts of 19, 19, 10, and 21 in four games where Connor was either sidelined or limited to under 20 snaps. So I guess Benny Snell is the RB2 in Pittsburgh, but it's not for certain. And I think he'd be more of, you know, low end RB2 than borderline RB1 if something happens to Najee Harris. With the Dolphins, like, it seems like Miles Gaskin is going to be a lead guy, which would make Salvin Ahmed a potential handcuff. He did handle touch counts of 22, 17, and 24. We do now have Malcolm Brown in there, though. And I think Brown's just, you know, that veteran that's good enough at everything to kind of prevent someone from completely taking over the backfield. So Salvin Ahmed, even though I see this scenario, a little bearish on that actually coming to fruition. With the Kansas City Chiefs, Le'Veon's gone, which means Daryl Williams is locked up as the number two back behind Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I mean, his final four games when CEH was trying to play banged up throughout the playoffs, Daryl went 70%, 79%, 46%, 55% snap rates. The problem, and we'll get to the Bills here in a bit, it's kind of the same thing like Devin Singletary. When Daryl Williams is the Chiefs' primary back, they're more content to let Patrick Mahomes throw the ball. I mean, in those games I mentioned, he had nice snap rates, but his touches were just 14, 17, 14 and 4. So, you know, Daryl, hey, we'll take 12, 14 touches in the Chiefs offense. I'm not saying he's useless. Just realize, you know, he doesn't have this sort of true high end RB1 upside you might think Andy Reid's number two running back might have. The Giants are interesting because I'm not buying Saquon being limited early on in the year. Just ask the doctors, people. Don't ask, you know, the injury prone experts on Twitter. See what the doctors are saying. Everything I've seen, you know, from Dr. Edwin Porras and even another physical therapist that was talking about it last week indicates that Saquon is well on his road to recovery, and his status as a freak athlete is going to help him overcome this. It's not like this was a December ACL tear. He's had ample time to get back out there. I saw the Jordan Renan report and everything, and I'm not saying that he's wrong with the idea the Giants don't plan on giving him a 90% snap rate to start the year. These are also things, though, where, you know, when Jason Garrett's orchestrating it, I think if Saquon is healthy enough to suit up, he will be getting fed. Either way, with Devontae Freeman, with Wayne Gallman gone, it's now looking like Devontae Booker is going to be the, you know, potential handcuff to own. So if you disagree with me, people, and you think that, you know, Saquon is going to get hurt again, or he's just not going to be out there for a while, go get Devontae Booker, because Deion Lewis is out of the picture too. And we already have Dave Gettleman calling Booker a three down running back back in April. So Booker, actually, you know, we got some steps here. Like, we got to take a little bit of a leap of faith, but I would say out of these later guys, Devontae Booker might be going more overlooked as a potential quality handcuff based on what he's been able to do. Now, this is PFS. I think our single worst offensive line going to next year, like 32nd. So I'm not saying Booker would necessarily thrive in that situation, but volume is volume. And if Saquon misses time again, Booker would be the favorite to get most of the leftover touches. with the Seahawks, I've soured on Rashad Penny behind Chris Carson as the offseason gone on because he's just not healthy still. He's still dealing with this knee injury. And we got Travis Homer, DJ Dallas, even Alex Collins, apparently, doing good things in training camp. There is a chance where, even if Carson goes down, we just see Penny, if he's not the same talent, if he's not healthy enough to be the same talent, not have a chance to beat out these other guys with the Chargers. So we're hearing that Justin Jackson could be, cut before the season, which would seemingly put Joshua Kelly as the favorite. And hey, this guy, even though he's not Austin Eckler receiving level, who is, he caught all 23 of his targets last season, and his only competition is 6th round rookie Larry Roundtree. So if the Justin Jackson rumors about him being cut are true, then Kelly could actually be shaping up as another quality late round guy. I am concerned though, because we saw, weeks 13 through 17 last season, he only played 9 total offensive snaps. So they were really going more with Kalen Ballage, Justin Jackson, and behind Eckler. So I'm concerned how, Kelly wasn't able to do more as a rookie. His efficiency numbers were awful compared to everyone. But, the offensive line did improve. And if they're giving him this, hat tip and leaving Justin Jackson out of the picture, only drafted the 6th round running back, I could see how Joshua Kelly could be, a lower middle class man's version of Melvin Gordon in this offense. More than anything, though, it's another reason to draft Austin Eckler, everybody. Tier 4, these are potentially perceived as two one-dimensional backups to truly take on a featured role with the Patriots, which kind of sparked this. Sony Michel, Ramondre Stevenson, Damian Harris, they have the pass down issues. James White, we know they're not going to give him a big early down role, regardless of who gets injured. Like, we're just still looking at a committee of probably at least 2 or 3 backs. With the Ravens, last year when J.K. Dobbins missed one game, Gus Edwards, and this was a game where they lost the Steelers 19-14. That was where I think they had RG3 and then like Trace McSorley under center. But Edwards only played 51% of the offensive snaps. Justice Hill was right there at 49%. So even though Gus made a few random nice downfield catches, I think they like Justice Hill enough to keep him almost as like a 1B guy if Dobbins misses time with the Bengals. So yeah, if you think Mixon's going to go down this year, you would think that you'd be pretty hyped about Samaje Perine. I'm not so sure he's going to get the pass down work that we saw Giovanni Bernard really limit his touches throughout the second half of last year. And I think, if Mixon does get hurt again, we just see, more of a 3-back committee with Perine, Travion Williams, and Chris Evans. Evans might be more so the guy to target just from the standpoint where they seem to really like his receiving skills. Wouldn't be the first Michigan Wolverine to, just not be utilized as well as he should have been in college. So, Chris Evans over Samaje Perine, it's certainly a debate I'd be willing to have. Tennessee Titans, Jeremy McNichols or Darrington Evans are going to be there. And McNichols is the only issue for Evans to overcome. One of the funniest reports from last year from Peter King, Peter's done great stuff over the years. I don't want to be mean to the guy, but one of his reports from the summer was that Darrington Evans has a chance to be a poor man's Alvin Kamara. So, maybe the early season hamstring injury just erased that pipe dream. But I think maybe the report was a little bit off in that situation, to put it kindly. But yeah, I think if, Henry goes down, Evans would be the back to own because of the potential for him to be this poor man's Alvin Kamara. But the problem is Jeremy McNichols seems to be someone they're comfortable with. McNichols was taking Derrick Henry off the field for 30, 40% of the snaps in certain blowouts. So I'm just not all that confident that, if they won't even give Derrick freaking Henry a true every snap role week in and week out, I have a hard time believing Darrington Evans would get that if Henry misses time. Buccaneers, we got this issue where, same thing with the Patriots, basically between Fournette, Rojo, Giovanni Bernard, and Keyshawn Vaughn. Even if two guys get hurt, like, we're still going to see a 2 or 3-back committee. And to me, that's just, problematic when trying to consider the huge upside these guys could have. Everyone's pretty affordable. I'm not saying not to draft Buccaneers backs. Just realize I don't really see a huge pathway to, Fournette or Rojo being this, season long RB1. And then with the Panthers, Mike Davis crushed it last year for us, but this year, will Chuba Hubbard be the same caliber 3-down back? I don't really think so. We got Trent Cannon, Reggie Bonifon there. Chuba, when he was at Oklahoma State, mostly just used in the screen game. I wasn't overly impressed looking at some of the advanced stats with what he could do as a receiver. And that's the question. Like, Chuba might be the favorite to lead in rushing, but we don't want that. We want the receiving back at a minimum. And I think it just ended up being, a committee in a not great offense that you'd probably be better off staying away from. Tier five, these are guys, you know, number two backs who I wouldn't expect their role to really change all that much. The team starter goes down. Starting with the Bills, I do consider Devin Singletary number two back here. And as we saw last year when Moss missed time, they basically just brought TJ Yeldon up, didn't change Singletary's role all that much. And when Singletary does play a lot, they're usually content to just pass the ball to their heart's desires. With Matt Breida there as the RB3, I would expect Breida to not be active during normal weeks and then come and, you know, be the RB2 if Moss misses time. With the Colts, Nyheim Hines, like, again, if Jonathan Taylor misses time, it's going to be probably more early down work for Wilkins, Mack, maybe an extra carry or two for Hines, but his role just wouldn't change all that much. He is their pass down back, gets a handful of carries. I'm not saying he couldn't handle more, but we just have Mack and Wilkins, two guys the Colts really like. I know the Colts like them more than, you know, most of the fantasy public does. And I just think, you know, again, Taylor goes down, Hines would still be in a two or three back committee. Same reasoning with Washington. JD McKissick just isn't ever going to get that three down role. As great as an asset as he might be as a receiver, we just know that he's, you know, three injuries away probably from being their consistent early down back. Same thing with the Eagles. Everyone knows Miles Sanders could be the lead back. But behind that, you know, your guess is as good as mine. Boston Scott, Kerryon Johnson, Jordan Howard, Kenneth Gainwell. I think Gainwell deserves to be, you know, the second running back drafted. His chance to be, you know, Nick Sirianni's, you know, new look, Nyheim Hines, speaking of the devil. But it's just a mystery. Like, it could be Scott, who was getting a more or less featured role without Sanders last year. It could be Scott as the pass down guy with Kerryon and or Jordan early downs and Kenneth Gainwell, like, doing extra. I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, mediocreness going there, with no disrespect to what Gainwell could bring to the table. And either way, I just don't think anyone's going to have enough touches in an offense with a scrambling quarterback to make it worth it. And then with the Chicago Bears, I mean, look, if something happens to David Montgomery, like, everyone's going to be screaming for, maybe not, hopefully people wise up. If you're listening to this podcast, you won't be screaming that, but I could see, you know, same thing like last year when Saquon Barkley initially got hurt, people said, oh, Deion Lewis is the RB2. He's going to be the guy. No, Deion Lewis's role was cemented as the pass down back. So when Saquon got hurt, we saw Devontae Freeman become the guy. And then Wayne Gallman become the guy. Same thing in Chicago. If David Montgomery gets hurt, it's not going to become the Tariq Cohen every down show. It's going to be Damian Williams taking a ton of snaps now, and Tariq Cohen's role probably not changing that much. Final 3 points, tier six. Who the hell knows what's going on here to begin with? New York Jets, we got Tevin Coleman, who has the, you know, the ex, he's coming over with the 49ers coaches. So Michael Pirine is the incumbent leader of the backfield. Michael Carter, highest drafted back from the new regime. Ty Johnson, Josh Adams have moonlighted in committees respectively over the years as well. I get that Carter is the highest drafted guy, but, you know, let's not get too carried away, everyone. As we all know, history of fourth round, later rookies at running back, not too good. And I just think that, you know, there's a good chance Coleman or Pirine or even Ty Johnson just make this a committee. We have no idea what's going to be in New York. And if Carter is going to be priced in the RB 30s or 40s, yeah, I'll take that upside. Just be careful about taking him over, you know, guys like AJ Dillon, the other really good handcuffs we know about, because as much as he could be the starter, like, it could also just be a random three back committee. We have no idea what's going on with the Jets backfield. I'm fine to embrace uncertainty as long as they're priced closer to their floor and ceiling. Where Carter right now, he's going a little bit closer to his ceiling than I'm comfortable with. Houston Texans, I mean, David Johnson seemingly the starter. Then we got Mark Ingram, Phillip Lindsay, and Rex Burkhead apparently going to get touches. And I mean, it's going to be a bottom five offense without Deshaun Watson. Bottom five is probably putting it lightly. And if Tyrod Taylor's under center, that's hurting these guys as well, as we talked about the scrambling quarterbacks. So again, if you just don't want to draft anyone from the Houston Texans this year, not a bad strategy. And finally, we got the Atlanta Falcons, and I fully expect Mike Davis to be the starter here. We did have the running back coach say the door is wide open for any of Davis, Quadri Allison, Javion Hawkins, or my guy Cordero Patterson to start. Again, I think Davis is just, he's good enough to get the job. 2 years, $5.5 million. That's not insignificant. You know, Hawkins, I see getting some love. He's ultimately a 5'9", 183-pound undrafted free agent. You know, everyone wants to say, oh, maybe he'll be the next James Robinson. James Robinson is the only James Robinson we've pretty much ever seen. Lindsay got close, but even he wasn't getting fed in the same extent of James Robinson in terms of these undrafted rookies. So Hawkins, not quite buying it. I would love my guy CPath to get the full run. Not quite buying that. And I think Allison is mostly just the guy himself. With that said, though, like, so I'm expecting Davis to be the starter, probably. If Davis gets hurt, who the hell knows what's going on behind him in that situation. So that's going to wrap up this episode, everyone. We made it through all 32 teams. Try to do so in a timely manner. Again, thank you as always for tuning in to the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Have a couple notes here because we got some good sales coming your way. Always getting messages on, you know, hey, Ian, how can I get the best deal with PFF? Everybody, we have the code for you. Fantasy football season is here. We are now offering 40% off any PFF subscription to all first-time subscribers with promo code SAVE40. You'll get access to PFF's Fantasy Football Draft Guide, complete with our player rankings and projections, College Football Preview Magazine, first edition of the 2022 NFL Draft Guide, and all of PFF's locked article content. Again, that's promo code SAVE40 for 40% off any PFF subscription. Get access to all of PFF's fantasy tools for $5.99. Not too bad, everybody. That's going to do it. Thank you again for listening to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. New episodes out every single day. I'm Ian Harditz. Until next time, take care, everybody.